my two supervisors, David and Terry, and a collaborator, Matt Pusey, which I'm assuming a few of you probably know. And it's just been put up on the archive last week, I think, so if you're interested, there's the reference. So let me first start by defining the quantum steering ellipsoid. It's not a commonly used term. So I'm imagining a scenario where I've got two observers, Alice and Bob, and they've each got access to a qubit. And those qubits are jointly described by some state, rho AB. Then the quantum steering ellipsoid is the set of all states, well, the block vectors of the set of all states, that Bob, by doing measurements on his qubit, can steer Alice's qubit to with some finite probability. So if the two qubits are correlated in some way, operations or measurements that Bob does locally will affect the state of Alice's qubit once he tells her the outcome of his measurement. Okay, so why are we interested in steering ellipsoids? Well, as we'll see, they allow geometric representation of a two-qubit quantum state. So for a single qubit, we have a nice faithful representation in terms of a block vector living in a block sphere, because a single qubit can be described by just three real parameters, so we can draw a nice three-dimensional vector. But in higher dimensions, it's harder to visualize a quantum state. So in this particular case of two qubits, you've got 15 real parameters. And then the question is, how do you visualize a 15-dimensional vector? So we use steering ellipsoids to do that. And not only is it nice to have a way of visualizing two qubits, but what I'll show you is that we've managed to discover most, if not all, interesting properties of a two-qubit state purely from the geometries of these steering ellipsoids. So let me first review the pure state steering theorem. So got Alice and Bob, they've each got a qubit labeled A and B, and these two qubits are jointly described by a pure state. So without lots of generality, so up to local unit trees, we can write a two-qubit pure state in this way. And I'm only considering angles theta that such that this state is not a product state. So I want to have at least, I want to have some correlations between A and B. So for example, not considering theta is zero or pi and so on. So the qubits individually can be represented by their own block vectors living in their own block spheres. So Alice's qubit has some block vector labeled A and Bob has a block vector labeled B. And because it's a pure state, they both have the same length. Okay, so now Bob does some measurement on his system. So here I've drawn a projective measurement so it has two outcomes and they're orthogonal. So when he does a measurement on his system, he collapses Alice's qubit to some new state, A1 or A2, depending on his measurement outcome. And crucially, these two collapse states have to form a convex decomposition of Alice's original block vector so that we can't violate no signaling. Now, the pure state steering theorem says that Bob can collapse Alice's qubit to any state in her block sphere. And this is sort of a hand-wavy argument for it. So this is Bob's projective measurement labeled M here. If he does a projective measurement on his side of this two-qubit state, then he projects Alice's qubit onto this pure state here. So these amplitudes here are just complex numbers, and you can just renormalize this state and write it in terms of some new angle theta prime and phi. So he collapses Alice's qubit to some other pure state. And by picking the angles of this vector M, you can kind of see that he can collapse it to any state on the surface of the block sphere. So to any pure state. And he can also collapse her to the states on the interior of her block sphere because by doing a POVM, because a POVM is essentially like a convex combination of pure states. So then you'll get combinations of these pure states analysis sites, so he can collapse her to states on the interior. So then Alice's steering ellipsoid is the full block sphere. So each time Bob does a measurement, he collapses her to some state. They have many, many pure copies of the same two cubit state. So then he's allowed to do measurements on his side over all possible angles and basically do like a tomography of his system. So in a state of a pure case, Bob can collapse Alice to any state in her block sphere. So then the steering ellipsoid is the full block sphere. But conversely, for pure states, we have an additional property, which is that given a convex decomposition of Alice's original block vector, there is a POVM that Bob can do on his side that can steer Alice to that convex decomposition. So I'm not going to go through the proof of that, but that's just another point. And we call this complete steering of qubit A. So the fact that you can decompose Alice's initial block vector, and then Bob, there's a measurement that Bob can do that will steer Alice to that decomposition. So these two points together, the fact that Bob can collapse Alice to any state in her block sphere, and that you can completely steer Alice's qubit, these two points together form the pure state steering theorem. And the theorem is true, remember, for any value of theta except when psi b is a product state. So this is an old, something that's been known for a while, and it was first pointed out by Schrödinger in a slightly different form, and it's repeated again in Frank Verstraeten's thesis. Okay, so this is steering when Alice and Bob share a pure state. So now the general steering ellipsoid extends this idea from when they share a pure state to when they share a mixed state. So now the set of states that Bob can steer Alice to is a subset of the full block sphere, and the subset is an ellipsoid. So point one always breaks down. And remember, point one was that the steering ellipsoid for a pure state is the full block sphere. So that's not true anymore. We steer to a subset of the block sphere. And sometimes point two breaks down. So remember point two was that given some decomposition of Alice's qubit in her steering ellipsoid, there's a measurement that Bob can do to steer her to it. That's not true. There are now some decompositions of Alice's block vector that Bob cannot steer to. And I'll get to that a little bit later. Okay, so now I'm going to go through the derivation of why the set of steered states is an ellipsoid. So first of all, we have to write down the two qubit states in the Pauli basis representation. So in the same way that when you look for the components of a block vector of a single qubit, you expand it in the Pauli basis, you have to do the same thing for two qubits. So we expand the two qubit density matrix in this homogeneous Pauli basis. So you've got the Pauli basis and the identity, and the coefficients that appear here in this expansion are real, and there are 16 of them, and the quarter there is just for normalization. So then to get to these coefficients, you can take the trace of rho with these Pauli bases, and then writing out theta as a matrix, it looks like this. So this is in a block matrix form. So on the top right here, so this is the on the top row, you have the block vector for system B as a row vector. And in the first column appears the block vector for system A. And this 3x3 matrix on the bottom right is something we call the T matrix. And it contains the outcomes of doing two qubit Pauli measurements on the system. So that's what theta looks like. Now, we also need to ask the question of what do POVM elements or measurements look like in this Pauli basis. So any Hermitian matrix can be expanded like this. Again, the half is there for normalization. And POVMs are positive operators. So imposing this condition of positivity, you come up with these two inequalities. So the first is that the zeroth entry of that vector x mu, so remember x mu is like a four vector, the zeroth entry has to be non-negative, and you also have this condition here. So now these two conditions together mean that x mu is a four vector living in the forward light cone. So just bear that in mind for a bit later. Okay, so now you can ask the question of what is the steered state that Alice is, or what is the state that Alice is steered to, given that Bob has done some measurement on his system. So That's the first line there. Bob does a measurement, some POVM element E, and then you trace out B. And then I want to see what that steered state is in terms of these Pauli basis coefficients. So just inserting what I'd written down on the previous slide, these expansions in the Pauli basis, you get some matrix equation. But just one thing to mention first, you can also write this steered state. It's just going to be a valid qubit state in terms of some other four vector y. So you have the same rules. This is some positive Hermitian matrix described by this vector y. And putting all these things together in the Pauli basis, you end up as the steered four vector y is just equal to a half theta times x. So it takes on a nice simple form in this Pauli basis. Remember, x is the four vector describing the measurement Bob does. Theta is the two-qubit state that they initially share. And y is Alice's steered state. OK. So one other thing we'll have to introduce is something called a local filter. So another word for a local filter is a stochastic local operator with classical communication. So it's like doing, it's a non-deterministic local operator. So it occurs with some finite probability, and it's not trace preserving, so you have to take the trace on the bottom. And the local filter I've called FB. And the point is that the steering ellipsoid, or the set of steered states for Alice, is invariant under local filters on Bob's system. So to see that, so this is how local filtering operation looks like in Hilbert space on the density matrix. But in this Pauli basis representation, these local filters act like Lorentz boosts on the state theta. So theta, big theta, remember, was the Pauli basis representation of rho AB. And now this whole thing here ends up just being a right-hand multiplication by a Lorentz boost. So there's a one-to-one mapping between this guy, FB and lambda B. So now to see why the set of steered states is invariant under these Lorentz boosts or local filters, consider this equation. So here you have some steered state y prime is equal to, what I've done is I've done a local filter on the density matrix that they initially share. So Bob does a local filter, and the new steered state equation looks like this. So this is this locally filtered rho AB, and Bob does some measurement x now in this new state. But this is exactly the same as this thing. So the old density matrix, big theta, times x prime, where x prime is just lambda b times x. So I've just basically moved the lambda from multiplying theta to now multiplying x. And you obtain the same steered state y prime. And the reason this is important is because, so another question is this a valid measurement? And the answer is yes, because remember, this was a four vector living in the forward light cone, and Lorentz boosts take vectors living in the forward light cone to other vectors living in the forward light cone. So x prime is also a measurement. And since the steering ellipsoid is the set of all possible states that Bob can steer Alice to, i.e. it's the sets when he does all possible measurements on his system, then this is also a valid measurement that he can do. So you can kind of see that he will obtain, on Alice's side, the same set of steered states. So we get the same steering ellipsoid whenever Bob does a local filter on his side. And the reason why this is nice is because you can kind of go to a new frame where this whole steering formalism looks a little bit easier. So you kind of go to a rest frame, basically. So we can pick a special local filter to simplify this whole calculation. And a particular local filter that we choose is this. And the effect that it has is that it reduces Bob's block vector to zero, or it reduces his reduced state to a maximally mixed state. So This is, you can see this from this kind of Pauli basis representation. And what it means is that Bob's block vector has been reduced to zero by this local filter. Alice's block vector has changed, and so has this 3x3 matrix T. So now a steered state with this locally filtered state is equal to theta prime times x, so this new theta. And x is just a measurement that Bob can do, so we can write it a little bit more explicitly. Remember, this is a four vector with one as the first entry, and x is just a three vector describing basically the block vector for this particular POVM element or projector. So then, if you just literally multiply these matrices together, you obtain this four vector here. So this is the block vector for Alice's steered state. So then what that says is that with probability of half, Alice is steered to that vector there, A prime plus T prime X. So then the set of all Alice's collapse states, when Bob does all measurements on his side, is the unit sphere of all possible X. So these three-dimensional vectors for Bob's measurement, and they have to satisfy this condition. So they live in a unit sphere of radius one. So the set of Alice's collapse states is the unit sphere of all possible X, shrunk and rotated by T prime, and translated by A prime, if you think about all possible measurements that Bob can do. So the set of all states that Alice can be steered to is an ellipsoid. So now we want to find the properties of this ellipsoid. So we want to find its semi-axis and its orientation. You do that by looking at the singular values of T prime. So if you singular valuely decompose T prime, then you can write it in this form. So you've got O1 and O2 are some orthogonal rotations, and D is a diagonal matrix containing the singular values. So imagine inserting this up here. O2 doesn't have any effect on this unit sphere of possible X. It just rotates it. D will squash it in some way in different directions, so in the three orthogonal directions. And O1 will rotate this kind of squashed unit sphere or the ellipsoid. And then that whole squashed and rotated ellipsoid is translated by the vector A prime. So that gives you the center of the ellipsoid. So that is the set of steered states in this locally filtered picture. So now you want to go back to the original picture to find the properties of the ellipsoid for the original state theta, not theta prime. So that's what this slide is about. So you can undo the local filter to get back to the original state. It does not change the steering ellipsoid at A, because remember, the steering ellipsoid is invariant under local filters at B. But it gets us the form of the ellipsoid in terms of the original components of theta. So then these two equations here give you the properties of the ellipsoid in terms of the original components of this guy, which were the block vectors A and B and that matrix T. So QA is just a horrible-looking equation. It's just the 3x3 matrix containing the ellipsoid properties, so the semi-axis and its orientation. And CA is the center of the ellipsoid. Now, in terms of the components of theta, so notice that it's not containing any A primes or T primes. Sorry.
You define T prime and A prime in the left side. Are Q and C the T and the A for the original
Oh,
data?
I didn't write down what QA was in the original form. I just wrote down, so yeah, maybe I should make the notation a bit clearer. So in here, I've never written down QA. I've just defined it in the next slide. But the center CA is actually just equal to A prime, if that makes sense.
Which is the transformation for the theta prime and A prime. And now you want to characterize
So I want to characterize the, so you can get the equations for, so the ellipsoid is usually defined by some symmetric 3x3 matrix whose eigenvalues are the roots of the, whose semi-axes are the roots of the eigenvalues, and the orientation is given by the matrix in the eigenvalue decomposition. So the eigenvectors, yeah. So that's T prime. It's actually T prime transpose T prime, or T prime transpose. But I haven't written down what QA, but you can write QA in terms of T prime. And then you undo the transformation on T prime to get it in terms of T, if you see what I mean. It's just that I haven't been that explicit about it. Yeah, I didn't want to go into too much detail about it.
That's what's confusing. You just said it contains.
Well, okay, you can think about, you can just look at the, because you know the semi-axes are the singular values of T prime and the eigenvectors are given by O1, you can invert T prime and get it in terms of TAB and then find a singular value of that whole matrix, whatever it is. And you essentially get the same information, if that makes sense. So what I'm trying to say is you can write T prime in terms of these components here. And once you have that form, then you can singular value decompose the matrix in terms of these components. And then that tells you about the orientation of the ellipsoid and the semi-axes. Just because you know what the local filter is and you know what the original theta, big theta was. Maybe I'm not explaining it very clearly. It's not hard, it's just a bit fiddly in terms of. Yeah, but the eigenvectors of Q are the same as the eigenvectors of O1. Yeah. And the semi-axes are in D. Yeah. This is just in a different form. This is just in this kind of symmetric form. Well, the Q contains the eigenvalue squared. Yeah, so because usually the ellipsoid is represented by a symmetric matrix, but T prime is not symmetric. So usually you take something like T prime transpose to get the symmetric matrix, and then you get the products of the eigenvalues, and that's why it's the eigenvalue squared. So the reason we have Q is just because that's the way you usually represent an ellipsoid, is by the symmetric matrix. But it's just symmetrizing this T prime matrix here by just multiplying by its transpose. Does that make sense? Not so much.
Is it true that the equation for the ellipsoid is x transpose qx equals?
Yeah, but that q is symmetric.
And that's
that q. That's that q, yeah.
That's the definition of it. Maybe you should write down the board and then roll the.
There a bit of free board?
X transpose QA.
Yeah. So X. But we didn't want to write this down because this actually involves the sem. So whatever, I'll write it. So this is the way you usually define an ellipsoid. So you just have three-dimensional vector, and QA is some matrix. So if you diagonalize it, not singular values, but just normal diagonalization. So let's call it M. Then the deltas contain, I think there's a minus here. So they contain, the diagonal entries here are actually the inverse of the semi-axis squared. But The point is, we didn't want to go into this formalism because sometimes the semi-axes are zero, and then how do you invert them? So this is just this is basically how Frank Verstrata does it. You know, I said there's this problem that he only looks at invertible theta. So to bypass that problem, it's a slightly more complicated formalism. Otherwise, you can just kind of do the standard ellipsoid approach, but then you run into this issue of what if your ellipsoid is degenerate? Yeah. Okay, next time I give this talk, I'll include that. So actually, just to make it a bit more confusing, this is actually, where did the chalk go? So what I've called QA here, actually in here is QA to the minus one. So I've already done an inversion of this, so I don't have any inverses of semi-axes. Okay. But essentially now you can take this equation and because you know the density matrix, you can just plug in the relevant components and just get out the form of the ellipsoid for looking at QA and CA, the center. So, okay, we specified what the steering ellipsoid is for a general two-qubit state. So Frank Verstrata in his PhD thesis knew this. So the general steering ellipsoid formalism is not new. So what Frank Verstrata showed was that for many density matrices, these two objects, so the steering ellipsoid matrix QA and the center CA, and the two block vectors of the original ellipsoid, all four of those objects give a faithful representation for many two-qubit states. And this is really neat because we can draw all these objects in a single block sphere. So as this diagram shows, you have, this is basically the steering ellipsoid for qubit A. So it's this big blue blob. And the block vector for qubit A necessarily lives inside it because you can only steer to convex decompositions of A. And the red dot here is the block vector for system B. So a kind of hand-wavy way to see why this is a faithful representation is just by looking at parameter counting. So the 3x3 matrix is a symmetric matrix, so it has six independent parameters. So the three semi-axes and the three eigenvectors give you 6 degrees of freedom. The center CA is a three-dimensional vector, so you have another three components. And the two block vectors here give you another three. So in total, this bunch of stuff has 15, is described by 15 real parameters. And so is the two-qubit state, rho AB. So naively by parameter counting, it looks like this should give a faithful representation of the state. The only caveat is that on top of these things, you also need to kind of draw, you also need these contour lines to kind of give you because if you think about the pure state example, the steering ellipsoid is the full block sphere, but then you can't distinguish between local unitaries on the individual qubits. So you need a way of drawing like the local bases or the local reference frames. So you need the same thing for a general two-qubit state. You need to have these contour lines and a way of representing how the original state was oriented in its own block sphere, in its local frame. So, the steering ellipsoid and two block vectors are a way of representing any two-qubit state. And there is an alternative as well that I just read about now by a guy called Joe Altapeter, where he actually, rather than drawing the two reduced states, block vectors, he draws the two steering ellipsoids. So the steering ellipsoid for Bob steering Alice, and then there's a complementary one for Alice steering Bob. And he uses some kind of coloring scheme to basically, rather than these contour lines, and he shows that that gives a faithful representation. But to do that, you need to draw two block spheres. So we think that this is better because you can represent a two-qubit state in a single block sphere. So the other thing I've highlighted here is that Frank Verstrater did this for many two-qubit states, rho AB, and he basically, like I said before, required that the big matrix theta had to be invertible, which isn't true in general. So our work has been basically to extend Frank's result and show that those four objects give a faithful representation for all two-qubit states, not just ones that have an invertible theta. And what Frank and Joe haven't done is talked about how you could say, ask questions like, given the volume of the ellipsoid, what does that tell me about the density matrix? So we've also managed to deduce all interesting properties of a two-qubit state purely from the geometry of these ellipsoids. And the last point I'll get to a little bit later. Okay, so going back to what I just said, I'd like to be able to say something about the volume of the ellipsoid and what does that tell me about rho. So the volume of the ellipsoid gives rise to this curious relation, so expression even. So the volume of the ellipsoid is equal to the determinant of rho, so the two-qubit density matrix, minus the determinant of rho partial transposed over this factor here, where B is the length of Bob's block vector. And the volume looks like it should have something to do with the entanglement because of the appearance of the partial transpose of rho, but it is in fact not an entanglement measure. And the easiest way to see this is in the following counterexample. So consider the steering ellipsoid that's generated by, or that's a mixture of three classically correlated states. So it's an equal mixture of 0, 0, and 1, 1. And the steering ellipsoid for this classically correlated state is just a line. So ellipsoids can be degenerate. They can be also ellipses or just one-dimensional ellipsoids, which are lines. So Bob can steer Alice to any state on this line. So a mixture of this guy and then the rotated version of that is steering ellipsoid connecting plus and minus, and the steering ellipsoid for this guy is a line connecting the Pauli-Y eigenstates. Then the ellipsoid that is generated by summing those three states together is one that has non-zero volume. So these three had zero volume, but by taking a probabilistic mixture of them, you can make an ellipsoid with finite volume. So then the volume is not an entanglement measure because it increases under LOCC. So what is the volume then if it's not an entanglement measure? Well, it does tell us something about correlations. So from that formula, you can deduce that all entangled states always have finite volume because all states have determinant of rho non-negative, but all entangled states have this guy strictly negative, and you can prove that that's necessary and sufficient condition. So putting those two facts together, you can deduce that an entangled state always has volume strictly positive. However, separable states can have volume zero or positive, as we just saw in the previous slide. But the volume can also act as an entanglement witness. So if the volume of an ellipsoid is greater than some bound V star, then you know that the state is entangled. And V star is actually the volume of the Werner state of the separable entangled boundary. So, okay, we've asked once the question about the volume, but it would be nice, we know it's not an entanglement measure, so the next thing to ask is, well, looking at the ellipsoid, how can we tell if the state that it represents is entangled or not? And this is the main result of the paper. So necessary and sufficient condition for entanglement is, it says that rho AB is separable if and only if its steering ellipsoid fits inside a tetrahedron inside of the block sphere. So I give you some density matrix, you draw a steering ellipsoid, say for Bob steering Alice, and if you can find a tetrahedron, you draw all possible tetrahedra around it, and you find a tetrahedron that itself fits inside of the block sphere, but encompasses this steering ellipsoid, then you know that the state is separable. But if that's not possible, then you know it's entangled. Okay, so just to give you a vague idea of how we proved that, so the necessary part was easy because the answer was already in this paper, and it's asked the question, no, so it basically says that any separable state can be written as a probabilistic mixture of just four product states. Not necessarily pure product states, but just four product states. So imagine Bob does measurements on his side, beta I here. Then Alice will be projected onto convex combinations of these alpha I's. So that tells you that her steered set lives in a simplex or a tetrahedron whose four vertices are given by the alpha I's. So that answers the necessary parts. The sufficient part was harder, and it involved answering, did I miss a slide? Or maybe. So the sufficient part was harder, and it involved answering the question of, given any ellipsoid that is inside of a tetrahedron inside of a block sphere, is there a separable state that corresponds to that ellipsoid? And we were able to show that yes, there was always a separable state that's compatible with it. So that proved that condition. So another thing that we have from the steering ellipsoid work is an answer to the following question. So the minimum number of product states that a separable state can be decomposed into. So that in general is a hard question to answer, but it's very easy to see what the minimum n is in this decomposition by looking at the steering ellipsoid of the separable state. So the minimum n is given by the dimension of the ellipsoid plus 1. So that's nice that for some reason separable state decompositions are compatible with properties of the ellipsoid. So to answer this, it came down to a purely geometric question of, does every ellipse inside a tetrahedron that fits inside a ball fit in a triangle inside the ball? It's a bit of a mouthful. So we couldn't answer it, so we put it online on mathoverflow.net, and someone managed to answer it, another Imperial student, Mihai, and it's a very non-obvious answer using some crazy mathematical geometric postulates, but I'm not gonna go through the proof, but basically what he does is he takes a tetrahedron and draws an ellipse inside of it and projects this ellipse down onto one of the faces and then uses something called Poncelet's porism to show that is always possible. So, okay, so it's nice because it's a connection between quantum states and geometry. So there's this interesting relation which comes from steering ellipsoids. Okay, so we have a condition on necessary sufficient condition for entanglement. We've said something about decompositions of pure states. So what it's taught us is that the strength of correlations in a two-qubit state depends on three key features of the ellipsoid. It depends, we saw the volume has some kind of information about the correlations, but also depends on two other important things. So the distance of the ellipsoid from the center of the block sphere and something we call skew, which is the spatial orientation of the ellipsoid around its center. So to see why skew is important, let's look at discord. So hopefully people are vaguely familiar with discord. So take the state, a zero discord state, which has a steering ellipsoid on the zero discord side, which always runs through the diameter. So the steering ellipsoid in this case is just a portion of the diameter. And it lies parallel to its center vector and has what we call zero skew. And that state is zero discord. But now if I rotate the steering ellipsoid, I've kept the center vector the same, the distance from the center, and the volume is the same, the volume is zero. And all I've done is change the skew. this state, this ellipsoid now represents a state with finite discord. So we found something that discord is sensitive to in terms of ellipsoids, which is sort of interesting, I suppose you could say. So to look at this a little bit more, these three pictures are steering ellipsoids of physical quantum states. And all I've done is taken the steering ellipsoid and rotated about a vector pointing out of the board. So I haven't changed its volume and I haven't changed its distance from the center. All I'm playing around with here is this property of skew. And imagine just like this rotation being parameterized by some continuous variable theta. Then I want to compare what different correlation measures are, how they're affected by this orientation or the skew. So that's what this diagram is here. First of all, look at the volume. So because I'm doing a rotation, the volume isn't changing. However, the concurrence increases as the major axis aligns with the center vector, which is what's going on here. The discord, however, has completely opposing behavior. So as far as I know, this is the first time I've seen really opposing behaviors of concurrence and discord. So they seem to be differently affected by this property skew. Okay, but also what this diagram says is that the volume really is behaving independently of concurrence and discord. So we've postulated that the volume is to do with a new type of correlation, which we've called obesity. And the definition of obesity is a state is obese if it's the volume of its steering ellipsoid is positive. And we think it's a non-trivial type of correlation in the sense that it's different to entanglement or discord. So all entangled states have obesity. So I showed before the volume is strictly non-negative for an obese state, not just non-negative, sorry, positive for an obese state. No, what am I trying to say? The volume is positive for an entangled state. And only some separable states are obese because separable states can have volume equal to zero. And all obese states have finite discord. So a zero discord state was just a line and that has no obesity. Okay. So we haven't been able to come up with a protocol in which an obese state is some kind of useful resource. The only thing we've been able to do is come up with a fairly contrived teleportation type scenario in which obesity would be important. So that's something that we're still looking into. Mm-hmm. So yeah, non-zero disk, remember I drew the line that was just rotated to its center vector. That state has finite discord but zero obesity. So it's different to discord.
Can I ask the definition of volume on your previous slide?
Mm-hmm.
It had determinant rho minus determinant of the partial transpose of rho.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So
maybe the determinant isn't basis dependent.
So maybe the partial transpose of rho is basis dependent, but
yeah.
When you determine of that, it becomes basis independent.
Possibly, yeah. But that's a good question, actually. I'll just think about it.
Another way to say the question is that for certain rho, I can imagine that the partial transpose on B of rho is equal to itself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. States on B are invariant as partial transpose.
Mm-hmm.
But then it would seem that just some rotation on B would say like not invariant as partial transpose.
Mm.
So in the one case, the volume would be the determinant of rho minus the determinant of rho, which is obviously zero. And then in the other case, it wouldn't be. So I'm sort of confused.
Yeah. But the partial transpose, the state is only exactly the same if Like it has no component in the y direction.
So what are the states that are equal to their partial transpose?
So there'd be ones that don't have like a y component, because when you take the partial transpose of that, you get, you know, you're kind of like conjugating the y, because you can expand it in the Pauli basis. So if you just had x and z components, the part taking the transpose, there's nothing. But if it has a y component, then you get the complex part of whatever the y coefficient is, I think. The coefficients. I think it's just like a flip in the xz plane.
Reflection
even, yeah. So I think somehow when you take the determinant, it sort of washes that out. So the states that have yeah, I'd have to check that. Because sometimes the volume is zero, not just because the determinants are equal, but because a determinant itself, one of the determinants could be, they both could be zero if they have, you know, if they're not full rank, if they're both singular. And in that case, the volume is zero as well. But yeah, I'd have to get back to you on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just it's like the volume of a ellipsoid is the product of the semi-axes. That's equal to that, and that's derived. Yeah, and it's not obvious why, because the semi-axes are something that are natural in this kind of Fano or Bloch sphere representation. So to get that in terms of determinants of things that are living in Hilbert space is not an obvious transformation. So it sort of baffled us for a while. What does it actually mean? But so yeah, we think it has some kind of meaning, but we're still kind of looking for what it actually, why is it really useful somehow?
It could be that every time that's zero, there exists some basis relative to which it's entirely doesn't have any y tensor y in its representation.
Yeah, probably something like that. It's something I have to think about. Okay. So the last thing I wanted to talk about was this notion of complete steering. So this question of, given some decomposition of Alice's Bloch vector in the steering ellipsoid, is there a measurement that Bob can do on his side that will realize that convex decomposition? So skip a couple of these slides. So yeah, remember complete steering of A. So we had this... by definition, qubit A can be steered to any state in its steering ellipsoid, because that's what the steering ellipsoid is. But the second point is not always true, that for any convex decomposition of Alice's initial Bloch vector in the ellipsoid, there's a question of, does there exist a POVM that will realize that decomposition, or that will steer Alice to it? So this isn't true for all two-qubit states. So it holds for all OB states, so all the pure states. And it holds also for states, so these locally filtered states where Bob's Bloch vector is equal to zero and some others, but not the full set of density matrices. So to see an example of this, consider this, this separable state. So it's a mixture of 0, 0, and plus, plus. The steering ellipsoid is a line that connects zero and plus, and Alice's initial Bloch vector is just this red dot here. Now, can Bob state Alice to a decomposition of just these two states, so of just zero and plus? Turns out that he can't. So one, he might think about doing a measurement in the Pauli Z basis, so zero and one. And when he obtains the one outcome, he will never project onto the zero, zero part because it's orthogonal to it. He can only ever project Alice onto plus, so here. And if he obtains the zero outcome, then he'll get a little bit of this and a little bit less of this state. So he steers her to an interior point on this line. Similarly, if he measures in the plus minus basis, he will steer her to these two states. So the zero state, which is what he wants, but also an interior point, which he doesn't want. There is just a P over M that he can do that will steer her, that will indeed steer her to the endpoints, but with some finite probability, he'll also steer her to this midpoint here. So this is an example of a state that is not completely steerable. And this is interesting because it is not, it only occurs for separable states. So you never get an entangled state that's not completely steerable. It's just some particular steerable, separable states that are weird in this way. So somehow, in this steering scenario, separable states are the weird ones, not entangled states. So I think that's all I wanted to say about incomplete steering. So in our preprint, there's conditions that we have proper conditions for when a state is steerable, when it's not, or completely steerable. So that about wraps it up. We think steering ellipsoids are cool because you can faithfully represent any two-qubit state in a single block sphere using also the block vectors of rho AB of the qubit states. You can visualize many interesting properties of the density matrix geometrically. So something I haven't gone into as well is some necessary sufficient conditions for discord in terms of the steering ellipsoids, but we also have those. And it leads to new features of two-qubit states, so this incomplete steering and obesity. So for future work, we want to try and use these steering ellipsoids to calculate steerability in the sense of Howard Wiseman. So he has his own definition of steerability. And we think that they might be useful as an easier way to find the best separable approximation for a two-qubit state. This is something we're working on still. So thanks.
Mm-hmm. And the first ellipsoid, like the one of the first state, is contained in the other ellipsoid.
Mm.
Does that say something about the tool? Does it mean that you can get one state from the other by some local map?
That's a good question. The answer to the question is I don't know. Okay. But it's something we thought about for a while. But if you do LOCC on the state, is it just the volume that shrinks, or is it something else? But it's something that it's not entirely clear, because it's in this kind of highly basis representation. So operations that are natural in Hilbert space, they're not always obvious to see what are going on here. So something else we're also looking into is sort of what do non-local unitaries do in terms of these steering ellipsoids? How do they morph them around? And can you see anything useful out of them? But yeah, the basic answer is I don't know. So that's something we've been looking into.
Have you considered the sum of the semi-axes?
Some of the semi-axes?
Yes.
Yeah. Again, it's not. So in the case when both block vectors are set to zero, take the two-qubit states whose reduced states are maximally mixed, that's set. It turns out that the sum of the semi-axes is to do with the concurrence in the state, but when you go to a more general state, then it's not clear what the sum tells you at all. But yeah, it'd be like taking the trace of big theta. In the general case, again, we've looked and we couldn't find any kind of useful notion about the sum of the semi-axes either.
Go back to the slide where you talked about the conditions under which you can steer to all convex decompositions of the mixed state.
So this holds for?
So this holds for all OB states.
Yeah.
So do you mean all OB states that have B equals zero, or you mean?
No, just all OB
state, regardless of its center.
Yeah.
And then a state which may be not obese but has B equal to zero, you can do it there too.
So if you have just an ellipse or a line, as long as B equals zero, then you can do complete steering.
So I'm wondering conceptually what you need for complete steering. And I'm thinking it may be that all you really need is, in your case, Bob is steering Alice. So
before you say something, so when I, Matt Leifer also picked this bit out, and he was saying that it's possibly something to do with the, so for this state, for example, this is Alice is steering ellipsoid, but this doesn't tell you about the block vector and Bob's side. So in this case, the block vector and Bob's side is non-zero, and Matt Leifer's interpretation was that maybe it's something to do with the indistinguishability of non-orthogonal states. Because if he's the one doing the steering, then he hasn't ever got in his kind of steering ellipsoid set, he hasn't ever got two orthogonal states that he can access. That makes sense. So we can't ever do a projective measurement with a sort of definite outcome.
But
that makes sense.
True even when there's even when he has an obese ellipsoid.
No, it's to do with the affine span, remember, of the ellipsoid. That's why. So you take the ellipsoid and steering ellipsoid on Bob's side, and if its affine span contains the center, then you can always do complete steering. There's a little bit of a subtlety. But
saying that it depends on the indistinguishability of non-orthogonal states makes it sound like a quantum thing.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a perfectly classical thing, because I could have, instead of your zeros and your pluses, I could replace those with probability distributions that have some overlap.
Mm.
So then I could say, what's the space of probability distributions Bob can steer Alice to when they're joint distribution or something? And because the distributions in the two terms overlap, even though, you know, say my distribution P and Q on Alice's side could each be steered to, I can't steer to an arbitrary mixture of them.
Mm.
Is that true? In the classical case, you can, unless you do like toy theory where you strictly measure, I can always get to the endpoints by the way, and see what the actual state is. So I think that you're imposing an extra constraint on the measurement, but classically, I think you can always see.
I don't know, it seems to me like if I say I had just 3 points. And my two distributions, one had support on points 1 and 2, the other had support on 2 and 3. Okay, so that's my distribution P, my distribution Q, and then my overall distribution is PP plus QQ.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you went and measured exactly whether you have 1, 2, or 3 over here, then you would collapse to 3 different distributions. One would be P, one would be Q, and the other one would be P plus Q. And so that's just like the case you showed where you had that third guy in the middle, which is not the convex decomposition you were aiming for, which is just the one with the extremal points. So you might do well to start with the classical question and say, what distinguishes those cases where you can steer to any convex decomposition and those where you can't? And my gut feeling is that it has to do with whether B is a sufficient statistic for A or not. If you can get all information that you could have gotten by measurements on A by virtue of doing measurements on B, then I think you can steer to any decomposition on A.
Okay.
And so I suspect that the quantum condition is something like a quantum analog of the notion of a sufficient statistic, which is not totally clear. Matt and I have talked some about that, and there's still no really good definition of that.
Okay. Maybe I can ask you after. Yeah. Cool.
Any more questions? Thanks for doing it.